Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Eva. Welcome to the What You Next podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you here. So tell us who you are and what do you do?
Well, I am a historical romance author. I have just recently written the third book in my Union of the Rakes Regency romance series, which is, it is historical romance, but is inspired by movies, music, and television from the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. I love this series so much.
Thank you. Thank
it's
you.
Such a, like, it's like all these different Easter eggs. You're like, mm-hmm. Oh, I love this movie or even this song, you know, like, it just brings it all together and just gives you kind of like a, I feel like it's like a great historical moments for beginners to get too connected. Like if you're a fan of contemporary, you want to try historical because you watch Bridgerton. Like
sure.
This is a good, you know, historical romance to dive into.
Right. Well, and the, I think it's called the Vitamin String Quartet who did the pop, the mm-hmm. string quartet covers of pop music from Bridgerton. They actually have done a version of Don't You Forget About Me, which is the unofficial theme song of the Union of the Rakes, since the premise is based on The Breakfast Club. So I highly recommend you go out and listen to that because it's pretty rad, as we say,
Gen X. I love this. So yeah, I finished reading Waiting for a Spot. And so I saw the line. I was like, oh my gosh, it's like, do you say this? Don't You Forget About Me. So
yes, I went there.
You went there and it was just glorious. It was just editing. So let's see. So let's talk about your romance writing and romance reading. When was mm-hmm. were you a romance reader before you started romance writing, or just something just basically you start writing and you just discover the genre?
Well, I think it's a not uncommon phenomenon for people who start reading romance to also want to, once they start reading it, they also want to write it. And that was basically what happened with me. I was a writer all through like elementary school and junior high and into high school. And then in high school, a friend of mine started loaning me her mother's romance novels. And once I started reading them, I was like, ah, this is awesome. I want to do this too. So I started writing my first romance novel, probably when I was around 15 or 16. I have no idea what's become of that incomplete manuscript. I'm really glad that it'll never be found because it was probably on a, like a dot matrix printer, you know? Mm-hmm. So so that manuscript is long lost. So that's basically how I got started writing romance. It kind of folded into my journey as a writer.
So do you share your manuscript with friends or like you share like, you know, like the stories, you know, like, oh, this is like something I came up with, you know?
Well, I did. I mean, when I remember in elementary school, I used to write, I guess what we would call fan fiction mm-hmm. back then. This is in the early to mid 80s. So I was writing, as many people know, basically what we'd call fan fiction about Duran Duran. And also in junior high, I started writing about Wham. And and then I would just kind of write these stories that would inspire me from various different things. And I would share those stories with my friends. So I always knew that it wasn't just a secret thing. It was something I really wanted to pursue. I don't know if anybody ever read the first romance novel that I started, which was incidentally titled The Pirate Princess, but I don't know I don't know what's become of that, and thank God.
I love this. Yeah, I too wrote fan fiction, but I'm from Puerto Rico, so my fan fiction was Menudo.
Oh, of course, sure.
You know, post-Ricky Martin ages, like I had a specific time period because, you know, they rebranded the
right
members.
Like, sure.
It was like a process, but I feel like it's like there's something to be told about 80s and 90s like fan fiction, it did not exist, but we were creating our stories about musical groups and, you know.
Right. I mean, the music videos for me, especially with Duran Duran, were so inspirational because with their videos, they were like little stories, little movies. Mm-hmm. And so there were so, it wasn't just people singing and dancing. It was like there was a narrative. And that, and then the romantic sort of aesthetic really appealed to me. Like with Adam Ant and the Thompson Twins and Tears for Fears, all of those bands really spoke to me, but specifically Duran Duran's little movie cinema masterpieces. Those are the things that I just hooked into and kind of expanded on that and as a writer.
I love this. And now you write a historical romance set in the 80s. You
know? That's right. I know. It totally came full circle because I started reading romance in the 80s as well. So it was like these things happened all at the same time. This music, these movies, the books, all of those things were happening. And that was a very formative teen years for me. And so, you know, here I am in my 40s now, sort of taking all the things that sort of helped get me going on my journey as a writer and then creating work based on those early influences.
I love this. So let's chat about your journey to publication. What was that process like for you?
Well, I was in graduate school working on an advanced degree in English literature, and I was also writing at the same time. And I entered a story into a fiction writing contest. I won the contest, and then I started fielding calls from agents. But I didn't have a manuscript because I was like, well, I'm working on this. At the time, it was a PhD. Mm-hmm. And it sort of made me reevaluate what did I want to do with my life. This was in the late 90s. I determined that what I really wanted to do was write. So I went to an MFA program. And while I was there, it was a very sort of prestigious, highly respected, nationally known MFA program, which did not, I don't think anybody really countenanced romance writing and romance novels in that program. So I was writing these like sort of New Yorker type, Raymond Carver type short stories, but secretly I was pursuing this sort of romance writing on the side. And it was through writing romance that I realized that I wasn't a short story writer, I was a novelist. Mm-hmm. So 2 years later, I get my degree. I come back to Los Angeles to be with my then boyfriend, now husband. And I basically just started doing day jobs. And while I had a day job, I was writing in the morning and even writing at work, which was probably not great. But that was the first time I ever got paid to write but I was getting paid not to write. But mm-hmm. in any event, so while I was doing that, I finished a manuscript. I started querying agents. And this was back in the time where to query an agent, you literally sent them paper mm-hmm. and a self-addressed stamped envelope. And, you know, I'd go to the post office. And so I queried a bunch of agents and eventually one offered representation. And then she took probably took about two and a half, 3 years before she was able to ever sell anything of mine. And while that was happening, I was still producing more manuscripts. And so my first published romance novel came out in, I think it was 2006. Oh, so, and I've been pretty consistently published since then. I initially started as Zoe Archer. Mm-hmm. And I wrote sort of contemporary, I wrote just like historical. And then I wrote the Blades of the Rose historical romance adventure series. I wrote some sci-fi romance, some steampunk romance, historical romantic suspense. And then I changed publisher. I went to Avon and they were like, hey, maybe we might want to just kind of start over. And so they gave me this new name, which we concocted in the laboratory. And Ava Lee was born, and I've been with Avon now since I think 2014. So, and then here I am now. chatting with you.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So I gotta say, I now have like a backlist of like other work that you've done, you know, because I mean,
it's substantial. I actually had to do a spreadsheet because I couldn't remember how many books I had published. So I finally wrote them down and I was like, wow, that's not bad. So
that's a really great career. You know, it's like, it's great stuff. So I love this. So what has it been like writing the pandemic? You know, what kind of self-care are you doing? How's that going?
Well, for me, it's been a little odd. I have a very unique, very privileged, extremely privileged position in that I write full time. Mm-hmm. So I have basically, and I don't have children. So I don't have to spend my time doing a lot of caretaking. I mean, my husband and I do stuff. He's a romance author, Nico Rosso. Check his stuff out. Yeah. yes. We do household chores and things like that. But basically my life is devoted to my writing. So the biggest change and it was like that before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So for me, the biggest change is that I haven't been able to travel. I haven't seen my mother in over a year. I don't go to restaurants. I can't go to a coffee house to write, which is what I normally would do, mm-hmm. like, except for sex scenes. I always have to write those at home.
love that so much.
But it is super stressful because while the sort of the aspect of my day-to-day life hasn't changed all that much, the psychological toll of knowing mm-hmm. that, you know, the prior administration was so terrible about how they dealt with the pandemic and how many lives were needlessly lost. Mm-hmm. And we're still dealing with the repercussions and the slowness of rolling out the vaccination, just like all of these things. And then, of course, like the election, the insurrection at the Capitol, like all of these things, like they don't like directly, like I don't see them out my front door. But at the same time, they're going on in the sort of collective consciousness. And so that's really challenging. And also, basically, all I do is write. I don't really take weekends off. So it's like, I'm very lucky that I have lots of deadlines and I have obligations to meet. And at the same time, I haven't really looked up from my computer in over a year. So it would be nice to be able to, like, when there were conferences and things like that, to see my fellow writers connect with readers and get sort of energized by that. And I definitely feel like I've been missing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's just the social connection. Like we just, and then we're living unprecedented times. So it's just like the collective anxiety of like just going through, you know, this unprecedented times. Like I cannot explain it. It's just like, it's bad, bad, bad. And it's like, okay, can we see the light at the end of the tunnel?
It's pretty unrelenting. And that came at, you know, the concluding year mm-hmm. of 4 years of her, like living in this siege mentality, because you never knew when you woke up in the morning, Jesus Christ, what the hell are they doing now? Mm-hmm. What horrendous human rights violations are happening right now? You know, and so we were already exhausted. Mm-hmm. And then to add on top of that, this whole other component, it's just been pretty unrelenting. And so when I hear from readers that my books have provided some measure of solace, even for a few hours mm-hmm. in the middle of that, that feels very gratifying to me, mm-hmm. Especially because romance is so denigrated or dismissed in terms of like, it's just fluff or, you know, it's not real writing or what. I mean, like there's a host of misogynistic mm-hmm. charges against romance, but to know that entertainment has value. And also I like to imbue a little of my own personal ethos in that on my writing as well. So it's like to entertain and also to provide a certain measure of resistance against a lot of the sort of sociopolitical movements we've been seeing more visibly within the past 6 years, 4 or 6 years.
Yeah, I think me, like reading has been an escape, especially historical. Mm-hmm. Historical romance has been such a like a cornerstone of escape. Mm-hmm. It's like I can deal with like my present life, like, you know, the present moment, right. The political. But then I find myself like looking at historical romance as like a way to escape, just to be in a different space and to understand like different characters and different eras. And then just being, your books were, spoke to me because they were like, they reminded me of a better time. Mm. Like they remind me of like those 80s movies that I grew up with and that music that I grew up with. And it just gave me a sense of like, it's going to be okay. Like we're going to take a break. know? And we're going to skate for like a couple hours and we're right. just gonna like be in Duncan's, you know, world, you know?
Right. Right. Totally.
The other, you know, the Rothesby's, you know, bizarre, you know, that, right. that gave a sense of like, you know, we're in a different space and there's like, there's always the Easter eggs and trying to figure out like, oh, I know this, or it pushed me to go back and watch those movies. Like it was like, you know, a place of exploration and a place of change, you know?
Right.
So let's see. Let's talk about the, you know, the race. So did you have a plan ahead the series, or was it just as you wrote, you started discovering which couples were going to come, which movies you were going to highlight, which
well, stuff you were going to highlight? Right. Well, when I first came up with the idea of the Union of the Rakes, I had to write up a proposal for my editor, and it basically included the series. So it was like a synopsis, like an overall concept as to what the series was going to be about. And then I did brief outlines for each additional story. So I knew that basically from the get-go, which couple was going to get which story. And so it would have been very difficult, I think, to have the sort of trajectory without knowing ahead of time mm-hmm. who was going to be featured, especially I've got these five boys at the onset who meet in detention at Eton. Incidentally, there was no detention at Eton, but I fudged that a little bit. They usually, I think when I was reading the research, they usually caned their students for disciplinary action. And so that wasn't going to make it in the book. But like, so when I came up with this concept of the five boys who meet in detention, just like the Breakfast Club, and each of them was assigned a role, just like in the Breakfast Club, and then who was going to get their individual story. And at the outset, I was going to write Curtis and Roe as their own book. And then I was paying a lot of attention to social media and hearing people talking about when people write outside of their own lived experience. And because I don't identify as LGBTQIA, I felt that it wouldn't be appropriate for me, this is my opinion, for me to write a point of view character living a life that having experiences that I myself don't know, especially because I would love to see more own voices in terms of historical. We have wonderful authors like KJ Charles and Olivia Waite and Kat Sebastian writing queer historical. And I was like, okay, and they identify that way. And I was like, okay, this is not my story to tell. So initially I was going to write Curtis and Roe as their own story, but when I thought about it, I was like, okay, this isn't going to work. So I folded their narrative into the trajectory of the other three books. But they do get their happily ever after. I just want to let everyone know.
I was
know
so
that.
Happy when they got their happily ever after. I was like, oh, they're getting it. So,
yay.
And so let's talk about Waiting for a Sky. I love mm-hmm. the fact that we get an older heroine, you know,
yes.
who's a widow, who has a plan of her own. And then we get a grumpy, you know, dumb, you know, like
yes.
straight lace, like basically follow the rules, you know, and they're just kind of like opposites attract.
Mm-hmm.
And go on this journey, like they're just Ferris Bueller's, right?
Yes, it definitely was inspired by Ferris Bueller's Day Off, as is evidenced by her name, which is Lady Ferris, and his name is Captain McCameron, Major McCameron. So as you know, the clue's there, but I also was influenced. There's another movie, I don't know if you are familiar with it. It's a little lesser known, called The Sure Thing, starring John Cusack and Daphne Zuniga. And it's from the 80s. And it's about a straight-laced woman, female college student, and a wild and crazy male college student who go on this cross-country trip together, and shenanigans and love ensue. And so that was also sort of one of my major inspirations for this. And then there's, like, you know, obviously tons of other 80s Easter eggs in there. I had to actually sort of scale it back because I was like throwing everything at it. I'm like, okay, wait. I've got the most important thing is Beatrice and Duncan's relationship, not these 80s Easter eggs. So I had to be judicious in terms of determining what was going to make it on the page.
Now I'm curious. I'm like, oh, just kidding. Oh, Joe, I love their story. I really love like the fact that you're like a couple that I just didn't see it coming. And then when it makes sense, like once they got together, I was like, oh yeah, they make sense. And I love, you know, the ending, like it doesn't, the whole question about marriage, you know, that, you know, conversation about marriage and, you know, historical times. And even just now, like, you know, the expectations, like, you know, the freedom that as a widow she has, that she was not willing to let go, even though.
Right. And I was thinking about that. And, you know, Joanna Shoup in her Devil of Downtown, I think she had with Florence, and she has her specific, was it Devil of Downtown or the,
no, the Prince of Broadway?
Prince of Broadway. Yes, you're right. You're right. The Prince of Broadway. So Joanna Shoup in the Prince of Broadway, she has a heroine with an unconventional ending, you know, who doesn't necessarily have to insert herself into the dominant paradigm as to what constitutes a relationship. And I wrote my, I was like, this is awesome. I dig this. And I wrote my editor. I'm like, can I do this with my heroine? And she's like, yeah, I don't see why not. And I've been getting some pushback from like a reviewer here and there who object to that. But I'm like, you know what? People have been cohabitating for a very long time. And so without marriage. So I just definitely wanted to sort of say there are many ways to a relationship, and not one is not better nor more worthy than the other.
Yeah, I feel like living in sin, or however you want to call it, I love it. I love an unconventional ending, especially in historical, because it takes you by surprise. Like Prince of Broadway is one of my favorite novels of that series, because Florence and I don't remember, Clayton, I think they end up they end up together, but they were like, you know, they didn't have children. They were like fine. And I really love the ending Waiting for a Scot Like You, because it was like, they're fine. Like she's like, I already got kids. Like, it's like, we're just living together. Like, it's not this like expectation of like, we got to get married and we're going to be happy. Like happily ever after can mean so many different ways.
It can mean so many different ways. And I also want to make sure that people, our readers, are validated in their choices. You know what I mean? Which is why I, in my epilogues, I almost never have pregnancy or babies. Because I myself am childless by choice. And I know that there are many people out there who are, and there are some people, there are people out there who, cannot have children. And I want everyone to feel seen and validated, and to show that, you know, whatever form love takes, so long as you're not a Nazi, that's good.
Yes. Let's put that as long as you're not a Nazi, like, or any type of Nazi romance, any type of, you know.
No. Oh God, no, none of that.
Yeah, like, no. But, you know, like, I think I love the whole idea of, like, you know, as someone who's childless by choice, like, I really love the idea of, like, you're not putting the baby making as, like, the end-all be-all romance. Like, you know, there's other choices out there. And that's
there are many,
What are you working next?
So I'm working on a new series, which will come out February 2022. The book itself doesn't have a title yet, but the series is called The Last Chance Scoundrels. And it's about three horrible younger sons who are finally being taken to task for their wild ways. And they're each of them tasked, they have to get married within a year or none of them get any money. But they have to marry quote unquote respectable young ladies. And what the families who are issuing this ultimatum don't know is that these respectable young ladies are far more complicated than they would appear. So this notion of respectability and womanhood, I like to subvert that, and that will be happening in this series. And the book that I'm working on right now is, the trope for this one is my best friend's sister. Yes, that seems to be the general consensus when positing the best friend sister trope. People like that.
oh my gosh, I love this, you know, because there's like a level of forbiddenness. There's all this
thing
of like, you're not supposed to, or my brother's going to hit you. They're going to fight. Like,
oh yeah. And these are bad dudes. These are the rakish scoundrels. So it's like, they do bad stuff. And so they know exactly what the other person's, their friend's up to. So they're like, I know what you, I've seen you do it. We do it together. And you cannot touch my sibling.
Yes. Oh, it's going to be so good. I love this. Mm-hmm. So what is your favorite trope to read, and what's your favorite trope to write? Is it something similar or different?
It's pretty similar. I generally tend to write, you know, as you know, I go where my id tells me to. And I wish I could remember the person who kind of came up with this notion about you writing to your id. So I generally go towards tropes that interest me, but I also like to go towards tropes that I know people really like and see what I can do with them. I really do love cinnamon rolls. That's just kind of like, I think it's because I'm married to a cinnamon roll and mm-hmm. I adore him. And there's something about gentle, sweet, kind characters being recognized for that and finding love. Mm-hmm. I myself am not really into alphas. Mm-hmm. So I tend to sort of write away from that. And so it's like almost all of my heroes are in some way a kind of a cinnamon roll, or they discover their cinnamon roll. I remember Tessa Dare had this really beautiful quote where she said that a lot of her heroes have this like hard, crunchy candy shell exterior with a gooey beta center. Mm-hmm. So they were like alphas on the outside, but betas on the inside.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I get alpha on the outside, but I do like the sort of sweet, tender heroes, because I find that really hot. And I also love scoundrels, as is evidenced by the title of the series. So I was like deeply imprinted by Indiana Jones and Han Solo. So if you give me that sort of rakish smile, I love that.
I love this. Yeah, I love your heroes. I think of Sebastian with my fake rake. Like, he's mm-hmm. like such an ooey gooey, you know, like
totally.
Like totally cinnamon roll. Like, you just like put it in the package. It's like, there you go. It's mm-hmm. you know, we'll try to do a makeover, but you know, deep down, he's just gonna be a nice guy. You know?
Right, totally. And I think, like, you know, even with Rotherby, who's like this sort of like really powerful Duke, like he's also sexually submissive, which he discovers with the heroine. And so like sort of learning that like the thing that these men like the most is being with these women who are very strong and supporting them. And for me, that's just kind of the essence of what I like, sort of my core narrative mm-hmm. is the, like, you know, when the heroine does something where she's being very strong or forthright or exerting herself, and then the hero has the big heart eyes just like watching her do that, like that's one of, like, for me, one of the quintessential moments of romance.
Oh, I love this. So let's talk about book recommendations. Is there a book that you read this past year that you recommend?
I really liked Jackson by Laquette. That's just come out. So I would strongly recommend you reading that. I've really been enjoying Talia Hibbert's Brown Sisters mm-hmm. series. I had the vast good fortune of being able to read an early copy of Kat Sebastian's The Queer Principles of Kit Webb. And I highly recommend that. And if I can recommend my own husband's work, he just wrote a book called Contactless Pickup, which is a quarantine romance. Yeah, it's pretty great. It's like, how do you know, they have to stay 6 feet apart, but it's like, what can they do to overcome this distance, both emotionally and physically, in order to be together? And that's Contactless Pickup by Nico Rosso.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I need to pick that one up.
Yes.
Someone who's considering dating in COVID is like an interesting dynamic of like 6 feet
yeah. apart. Well, these people are kind of forced together. So it's like forced proximity, yeah. Which I think is a lot of fun.
Yes. Oh, God bless. Forced proximity, yes. Really every day.
Yes. Yes. Awesome. That's what's great about road stories, is they are forced proximity. You're stuck on the road with somebody. And so you have to kind of like beat it. You're together all the time.
And you gave us to just one bad trope, which is.
Oh, yeah. definitely.
Like,
you can't. Yeah. I consider myself now, like, something I've learned in my development as a writer is that just, like, tropes, man. Tropes are where it's at. And it's a trope, but make it yours. And so I think when I come up with ways to kind of take these very beloved ideas and then sort of put my little spin on it, I really like that. I like what I get from it. And I think the readers seem to enjoy it as well.
Yes. I have to say, like, it's a selling point to my community. Whenever there's like a just one bed trope, like, I'm like, you got to pick this one up. It's like an auto buy for, you know.
Right. So right.
It's like you discover like just one bed. Okay.
Sure. Right. You know, yeah. Grumpy one and the sunshine one. Yes.
Yeah. You know, so I love this. Right. So tell us where you can find you online.
Well, you can find me primarily on Twitter at Zoe_Archer. And where I often will espouse viewpoints that probably are a little salty, but I think and they're a little fun, I guess, too. And you can also find me on Instagram at ZoeArcher73. So those are the two places. And also you can find me if you go to my website, AvaLeeAuthor.com, you can sign up for my newsletter where you will get some bonus material, including 2 second epilogues, including a very emotionally satisfying second epilogue for My Fake Rake. And you'll also get a chocolate chip cookie recipe.
Yes.
Well, I mean, if you see me on social media, you'll see that between Nico and I, we have the baking. We just love baking. He does breads primarily, and I do the sweet baking. And so I couldn't have a newsletter without a chocolate chip cookie recipe in it.
I love this so much. And what kind of bread baking? Is it sourdough or is it any other?
Well, he was doing sourdough, but it's not so much labor intensive, but it's just like, it does take a lot of maintenance because you have to feed it every day. And especially in the early days of the pandemic when flour was hard to come by, that was very challenging because you have to like scoop it out and add more flour. And so that's a little hard, but he does other kinds like sponges, and he's made us bagels. He makes us pizza. He makes me challah, which is delightful because there's not a lot of Jewish delis here where I live. So it's very nice to know that I can get my bagels and my challah at the hands of my Greek Italian husband.
I love this. And what kind of baking? So you're sweet. So you're doing
brownies. Cookies, brownies, pies. It's hard because of the pandemic. Doing things like pies and cakes is a little challenging because it's like I loved sharing my food. And since Nico and I work from home primarily, he works, he has a part-time job at the library. So, but like we don't have workplaces and we can't go see our friends right now because we're trying to be very, very careful. So sharing food is hard. So cookies and bar cookies are the best right now because we can eat them all. And also what's really nice about cookies, here's a little tip that I've heard from sundry food places is like, if you make cookie dough, scoop it out and like pre-scoop it and then put it in the freezer and then store it in like Ziploc bags. And then when you want fresh cookies, you just take out balls of cookie dough, pop it on a baking sheet and then bake it for like maybe 1 or 2 minutes longer than you would nor if they were not frozen. And that way you have fresh cookies all the time.
Oh my God. Thank you for indulging with me about, you know, baking.
You're welcome. I could talk about it quite a lot.
I love this so much. Well, thank you, Ava, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a really good time.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatyourextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATYOURREAD10 to save. Visit whatyourextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyournextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.